Today is Wednesday, November 29th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, North Korea launches another ballistic missile after 2 months of silence.
It is a situation that we will handle.
Could the U.S. be close to moving its U.S. embassy in Israel? And will things be different in Zimbabwe under fresh leadership? Also ahead, the latest details on an upcoming royal wedding in the U.K. It's all on today's International Edition. North Korea has launched an intercontinental ballistic missile, the U.S. Department of Defense confirming it traveled about 1,000 kilometers and reached an altitude of about 4,500 kilometers. A statement by Pentagon spokesman Colonel Robert Manning said the missile didn't pose a threat to North America, our territories, or our allies. A U.S. intelligence official told VOA the United States is not surprised by the development. President Trump commented about it to reporters at the White House on Tuesday.
I will only tell you that we will take care of it. We have General Mattis in the room with us, and we've had a long discussion on it. It is a situation that we will handle.
North Korean missile was reported to have splashed down within Japan's exclusive economic zone. In Japan, the cabinet crisis team was summoned for an emergency meeting. Japan's chief cabinet secretary said Tokyo strongly protested the launch. VOA's Ira Melman spoke with David Wright, the co-director of the Global Security Program at the Union of Concerned Scientists in Massachusetts. He asked Wright to explain exactly what happened here with this launch.
Well, we know that it looks like the kinds of tests North Korea was doing earlier in the year, which was to shoot things on a very, very high lofted trajectory that would come down in the Sea of Japan rather than overflying Japan. If you look at how high it went and figure out how far that would go if you shot it on a normal trajectory, it's very, very long. It looks like they could essentially cover the entire continental United States with it.
So this is a major breakthrough then, is that correct?
Well, it certainly is longer range than we have seen them fire before. We don't know exactly how they did it. One thing to keep in mind is that it seems likely that they launched this with a very light payload as a way of trying to get longer range. And what that means, if true, is it means that it would not be able to carry, say, a nuclear weapon any place close to this kind of range. So there's still a lot of questions about it that we're trying to understand.
You've been studying this North Korean nuclear and missile program for, what, 20 years or so now?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. What does this mean as far as where they are?
Well, again, I think for those of us who have watched the program, it's clear that they've been making progress. It's clear that they have put together a team of engineers who know what they're doing, and they've been able to solve a lot of the technical problems. So I would say this is something of incremental progress in the sense that, we've seen them do long tests before, and this is somewhat longer. We'll have to wait. We expect to see pictures tomorrow and see if there's anything particularly different about the missile. But, what we're seeing and what I've been saying for 20 years is that given time, North Korea will figure this technology out and be able to make more and more capable missiles and warheads.
You're saying given time. How much time?
Well, I was saying 20 years ago we had, some years ahead of us. At this point, it's very hard to know. I mean, it clearly they are at the point where they're making progress toward being able to reach, the United States, targets in the United States with a nuclear warhead. But there are things we just don't know, like how heavy their warheads are at this point, what capability these missiles have if they carried a warhead. So, it may be a year, it may be 2 years, but it's no longer, 5 to 10 years.
Does this in any way change the way, in your mind anyway, the world and specifically the United States should react to this?
Well, I've been saying for a long time that this is a case where trying to sanction North Korea, trying to cut it off, has not been working. That there are no good military options because of the vulnerability of Seoul in particular, even to conventional attacks from North Korea. And that what really needs to happen is beginning of diplomatic negotiations. And I think this makes that even more clear, that they're continuing to make progress. Even if you think sanctions are going to work, they're not going to work as quickly as the missile program seems to be going forward. So I think there's really no other way around it than to try and sit down with North Korea. And even if you can't stop their missile and nuclear program, as much as we'd like to, you would still like to stabilize the situation so that things don't get out of control and there's an attack that nobody means to launch.
And that, as far as you are concerned, is only doable via negotiation.
Well, I think that's right. I mean, when you see the kinds of rhetoric, the kind of back and forth that President Trump and Kim Jong-un have had, you see both sides, making claims, drawing red lines, backing themselves in corners. And those are the kind of situations where some crisis can happen, where people make decisions that they wouldn't make in a normal situation. And that's, I think, the biggest threat right now, is that things might get out of hand under some sort of unexpected situation.
That's David Wright, co-director of the Global Security Program at the Union of Concerned Scientists in Massachusetts. Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. A federal judge has ruled in President Trump's favor on a consumer agency leadership. Bangladesh will turn an isolated island into a temporary home for 100,000 Rohingya refugees. Obama reemerges on the global stage with a trip to Asia and France. And Hawaii urges a top U.S. court not to fully allow Trump's travel ban. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Vice President Mike Pence said Tuesday that President Trump is actively considering ways to move the U.S. Embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem.
And while for the past 20 years, Congress and successive administrations have expressed a willingness to move our embassy, as we speak, President Donald Trump is actively considering when and how to move the American embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem.
Pence's comments were received with great enthusiasm at an event commemorating the 70th anniversary of the United Nations vote that led to the creation of the State of Israel. In June, Trump backed off the pledge as his Mideast envoy sought to reinvigorate peace talks between Israel and the Palestinians. The White House said at that time that the president was only delaying, not abandoning, his campaign pledge to relocate the embassy. And as a presidential candidate, Trump has repeatedly promised to move the embassy, a decision that would have been welcomed by Israel, but fiercely opposed by the Palestinians. VOA's Victor Beatty spoke with Russell Stone, professor emeritus with the Center for Israel Studies at American University.
Well, there's nothing new here, really. The decision that it's U.S. policy to move the embassy to Jerusalem was made now 22 years ago, and the decision to defer it has to be renewed every 6 months, and it's been happening ever since.
Why is the decision made more than 20 years ago to move it, and then why the delay?
The configuration at the time was to support Israeli the recognition of Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. At the time, it was hoped that it would be part of a two-state solution where there would also be a Palestinian capital established in the eastern part of Jerusalem. So the plans went ahead to build a building that would be the embassy in the western part of Jerusalem. The building stands, and in fact is actively used as a consulate, the American consulate in Jerusalem. So the infrastructure is in place, but the political decision has yet to be made because of the complications of the Middle East situation.
Well, do you anticipate the embassy will be moved under the Trump administration?
I can't guess what will happen under the Trump administration. The decisions swing from one day to the next. This can be done by executive order, by a presidential action, because the congressional decision has already been made.
He has mentioned, of course, in his campaign that he intended to do this. What are the problems with doing so?
Well, like many things in the Trump administration, once he examines the complexities of this situation, he realizes that it isn't so easy to fulfill campaign promises that were made in without being fully informed of the details. The issue is, of course, the opposition to it by the Palestinians and by other Arab countries. What's happening is that the sands of the Middle East are shifting, and some Middle Eastern countries are becoming more favorable to Israel. There, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and others are less likely to oppose this than they had been in the past. This doesn't mean that it won't be a political liability, however.
What is the state of the Middle East peace process, and how might this move impact that?
The Middle East peace process is moribund. It's, it hasn't been moving at all, and if the embassy were to move, it would be at least a public flare-up, a PR flare-up, but whether it would change the situation is doubtful.
And would it embolden Israel to not bargain or negotiate with the Palestinians?
Well, they're not bargaining with the Palestinians now, so there's no emboldening necessary.
Are there any other embassies in Jerusalem right now, or would the U.S. embassy move prompt other, perhaps, other countries to do the same?
There are a handful of embassies in or in the suburbs of Jerusalem, mainly smaller countries in Latin America. No major countries have moved their embassies to Jerusalem so far.
Is the structure right now that is in existence on the west side or east side of Jerusalem?
It's in the west side of Jerusalem.
So that would not impact any possibility of a future Palestinian state capital, East Jerusalem?
No. What has happened is there used to be two American consulates in Jerusalem, one in West Jerusalem and one in East Jerusalem. They were only less than a mile apart, but they were in different parts of the city. Those have both been closed down. They're still being used for official purposes, American official purposes, but they're not being used as a consulate. So both Israelis and Palestinians have to go to the consulate in West Jerusalem to get, for instance, visas to come to the United States.
That's Russell Stone, Professor Emeritus with the Center for Israel Studies at American University. Zimbabwe's incoming president acknowledges that the Southern African nation has a troubled past rife with human rights abuses at the hands of the party that ruled the nation for nearly four decades under Robert Mugabe. However, Emmerson Mnangagwa's inauguration last week has been followed by several high-profile corruption cases against his political enemies, which critics say just show trials to avoid addressing more serious crimes. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Harare.
The people have spoken. You yourself said, if the people say I must step down, you shall comply. This is the time to comply. Because the voice of the people is the voice of God. Today, we are witnessing the beginning of a new and unfolding democracy for our country. I pledge no one is more important than the other. We are all Zimbabweans. We want to grow our economy. We want peace in our country. We want jobs, jobs, jobs in our country. We need also the cooperation of our neighbors in SADC. We need the cooperation of the continent of Africa. We need the cooperation of our friends outside the continent. That we shall achieve. I'm already receiving messages of cooperation and support for us to grow our economy.
And you're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Hi, this is Victor Beatty, Managing Editor of VOA News. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.
VOA's International Edition continues now. Well, Monday, Britain's royal family announced that Prince Harry and American actress Meghan Markle were officially engaged and planning a spring wedding. In an interview, the couple revealed their relationship blossomed after a blind date last year, a week alone in Botswana, and a proposal over roast chicken in London.
It happened a few weeks ago, earlier this month, here at our cottage. It's a standard, typical night
it's
for us.
It's a cozy night. What were we doing? Just roasting chicken and trying to roast a chicken. And it was just an amazing surprise. It was so sweet and natural and very romantic. He got on one knee.
Of course.
Was it an instant yes from you?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I could barely let you finish proposing. I was like, can I say yes now?
She didn't even let me finish. She said, can I say yes? Can I say yes now? And then there was hugs and I had the ring in my finger. And I was like, can I give you the ring? And she goes, oh, yes, the ring. So, no, it was a really nice moment. It was just the two of us. And I think I managed to catch her by surprise as well.
Well, the engagement has been thrilling, not just those in the UK, but here in the US as well. And we are learning more details about wedding plans. Joining us now for details is Rare.us content editor Nicole Michella. Nicole, what can you tell us? Have they set a date?
Well, we have a month. Prince Harry and Meghan Markle will be getting married in May 2018. They announced that news on Tuesday, just one day after they announced they are engaged, and they did a big interview where they talked all about the proposal. Apparently it was very romantic, very intimate, just the two of them in Harry's home in London. They were making a roast for dinner, and the gentleman that he is, Harry, got down on one knee and asked Meghan to marry him. And while he was proposing, I guess she got very excited. She said in the interview that she was like, okay, are you done now? I want to say yes. so that's very cute. They were very affectionate and very loving. In this interview that they did with the BBC, it was people are comparing it to William and Kate's interview that they did almost 8 years ago now at this point. Kate and William were a little more subdued and professional, and Harry and Meghan were just like in love and goofing off behind the scenes. There was a really cute video that's circling on the internet of that now. But my favorite part, of course, besides the whole proposal story, is the details behind her ring. He gave her a yellow gold diamond ring. It has three diamonds in it. One is from Botswana, which is a place that's very, very special to the two of them. It's kind of where they fell in love. The two side stones on the ring are from Princess Diana's personal jewelry collection. Mm. So Meghan said it was really an honor to wear this ring, not only because it's a symbol of her love and her devotion and future marriage to Prince Harry, but also because it's a part of his mother, and his mother was very important in his life.
They do seem very, very happy and excited. Will they be living in the UK?
Yes, they are going to be living. They're currently living in Harry's home in the Kensington Palace Gardens, which is where they did their photo call on Monday. So they'll be living there, and Meghan brought one of her two dogs over from the U.S. to Toronto. She was living in Toronto, Canada, when she was filming Suits. So when she left the show, she packed up her apartment. She brought one of her dogs with her. She said the other one stayed at home with a dear friend of hers. And they're just going to live like this normal life. Meghan will not be a princess, though, after she is married.
Oh.
But she will have a title.
Okay.
Apparently, because Harry is the sixth in line to the throne, he will never become the Prince of Wales. That will be William's title when Charles becomes king. So Duchess Catherine will become the Princess of Wales. But Kate will be a duchess. I'm hearing that they're thinking maybe the Duchess of Sussex, which I think has a very nice ring to it.
Absolutely. And I know that they both are very family-oriented, and Harry really handled this in a very romantic and old-fashioned way before the proposal.
Yes, in that BBC interview, he said that he asked for Meghan Markle's mother's permission to marry her, which I think is very sweet and romantic and traditional. She has a great relationship with her mother. Harry loves her mother. And her father also released a statement saying that he wished his daughter a lifetime of happiness, but unfortunately Harry hasn't met him just yet. I'm sure the official introductions will happen before the wedding. And Duchess Catherine and Prince William are also very happy for the couple. Catherine was at a museum opening in London this week and said that she is absolutely thrilled for her brother-in-law and soon-to-be sister-in-law. So it is going to be a big family wedding.
All right, Rear.us content editor Nicole Michella, thanks for the update. The 2018 Grammy Award nominations have been announced. VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London joins International Edition Sarah Williams with all the details.
Today we're talking Grammys, which were just announced as far as nominations go, and we're talking Jay-Z, who leads the Grammys in nominations, which is amazing, which is totally unexpected. Everybody, before the nominations were announced, were predicting it's going to be Ed Sheeran. It's going to be the Ed Sheeran show. Ed's only got two nominations. And Jay-Z is nominated for 8 Grammys. He nabbed the most nominations, of course, for the success of his album 444. Now, before you ask, what's the significance of 444?
Yes.
I thought I would tell you.
Okay, good.
Here we go. 444. First of all, the number 44, or fours, are important to Beyonce and Jay-Z, and I'll tell you why. But number 44, that is the number president that Barack Obama was. Mm. And he was very good friends, and is very good friends, with both Jay-Z and his wife, Beyonce. So they, you know, might have incorporated 44 in the time, 444. Other things that are connected to fours, Jay-Z's birthday, December 4th. Beyonce's birthday, September 4th. They got married, April 4th.
I see a pattern.
You see a pattern. Lots of fours there. And so there you have it. So 444 is the name of the new album, which is nominated in the Album of the Year category. It's going up against Childish Gambino's Awaken My Love. Damn, Kendrick Lamar, who's been nominated for everything this past year and has won a lot of awards, Lorde's Melodrama, and Bruno Mars' 24 Karat Magic. So let's check out the title track. Here's Jay-Z and 444.
I apologize. Orphan woman eyes. Took for my child to be born. See through a woman's eyes. Took for these natural twins to believe in miracles. Took me too long for this song. I don't deserve you.
Okay, Larry, you might not know this, but why was Ed Sheeran, who's been very popular, had a lot of hits as well as Jay-Z, but why was he sort of almost overlooked this year?
I think that they're leaning more hip-hop this year. I can't tell you why, because the Grammy nominations are determined by a Grammy committee. And so there's a lot of votes that factor in, a lot of people who decide ultimately who the nominees will be. But it was very interesting because it is like the hip-hop show this year around. This is the first time for this. Jay-Z has, as I mentioned, 8, and he's the only artist to get nominations in the top 3 categories, record, album, and song of the year. Other nominees who have a lot of awards coming their way, Kendrick Lamar, and he's nominated for 7. Bruno Mars is up for 6. Childish Gambino is also up for 2, along with SZA and Khalid. They're newcomers. They're in the Best New Artist category. And SZA just won the Soul Train Award for Best New Artist. Khalid won the MTV Award for Best New Artist. So it's going to be an interesting show January 28th, and this time around it's in New York at Madison Square Gardens. Normally it had been held in Los Angeles, and this time around they're going to New York to host it. By the way, the record of the year category, Redbone, Childish Gambino, Despacito. There's a song you love to hate. 16 weeks at number one. Luis Fonsi, Daddy Yankee, and Justin Bieber, who just got his very first Latin Grammy Award for the success of Despacito. He might walk away with a regular Grammy for a song in Spanish. The Story of O.J., Jay-Z, is nominated for Record of the Year. Humble, Kendrick Lamar, 24 Karat Magic, Bruno Mars, they're all up for the Record of the Year. And if you want to know other categories, I have them. If not, tune into Border Crossings, and we'll talk about it. One of the other interesting things about this year's Grammys, Taylor Swift, zero nominations. Harry Styles, zero nominations. And Harry's had a couple of hits off of his debut solo album, Harry Styles. So very interesting how they made their decisions, but how exactly, I couldn't tell you. Only the folks who voted would know for sure.
All right. Thanks a lot, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossings.
I'm James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa. Join me every weekday mornings at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of the show through our listeners' mail segment. Just send your views to daybreakafrica@voanews.com or call us on 202-205-9942. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thanks so much for joining us. And thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Carl Starling. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Robert Mugabe resigned the presidency of Zimbabwe last week after Parliament initiated impeachment proceedings against him, ending his oppressive 37-year rule and opening the country to what U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson called an extraordinary opportunity to set itself on a new path. Mugabe was elected as Zimbabwe's first prime minister in 1980 and became president in 1987 after changes to the constitution created an executive presidency. He had remained in power ever since. During his rule, the United States condemned his government's increasing assault on human rights and the rule of law, and joined much of the world in calling for the government of Zimbabwe to embrace a peaceful, democratic evolution. In his place, former Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa was sworn in, promising the beginning of a new unfolding democracy. With the resignation of Robert Mugabe, today marks a historic moment for Zimbabwe, said Secretary Tillerson in a statement. We congratulate all Zimbabweans who raised their voices and stated peacefully and clearly that the time for change was overdue. The United States looks forward to and hopes for free and fair elections, said State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert.
The people of Zimbabwe have firmly voiced their desire for a new era to bring an end to Zimbabwe's isolation and allow the country to rejoin the international community. The future of Zimbabwe, though, has to be determined by the people of that country.
Secretary Tillerson also said, "We urge Zimbabwe's leaders to implement much-needed political and economic reforms for a more stable and promising future for the Zimbabwean people. We will continue to support the people of Zimbabwe as these reforms move forward." U.S. Ambassador to Zimbabwe Harry Thomas noted future U.S. engagement with Zimbabwe and President Mnangagwa will depend on those actions. This is a new day. This is a new opportunity for him and his cabinet to live up to the wonderful 2013 Zimbabwean Constitution. And that is what we will tell them. It is your constitution. It is democratic. It is something you endorsed when you were Minister of Justice and later as Vice President. This is for your people. So live up to it, and the United States will find a way to partner. The United States is the largest provider of development and humanitarian assistance to the people of Zimbabwe, providing $253 million last year. The United States, said Secretary Tillerson, strongly supports a peaceful, democratic, and prosperous Zimbabwe.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.